Welcome to this episode of Wildcast. I'm your host, Matt Blymeyer. Our guest today is a Cincinnati, Ohio native, a Norwich graduate, spent 4 years in the Navy following his graduation from Norwich, and then got into coaching first at Springfield, then at Center College, eventually at Thomas College in Maine before making his way to become the head basketball coach at Penn College. Joining us today is the head men's basketball coach, Jeff Hensley. Coach Hensley, thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
So let's start. Let's go back. And you're a boy in Cincinnati, Ohio. You eventually go to Norwich with the idea in mind of serving our country in the Navy. Let's start there. Why Norwich? When did you decide that you wanted to join the Navy, and what was your experience like after graduation of Norwich in the Navy?
That is a very detailed question.
Yes, thank you.
That has many different parts to it. Going back to Cincinnati,
Good chili?
The best in the world.
Best chili.
Yes. If you have not been to Cincinnati, put it on your bucket list. It is definitely worth the visit.
Skyline.
Skyline chili. It's the best. Three-way, four-way. I do a four-way with some onions on it.
Okay.
But growing up, I loved the discipline and commitment of sports, specifically basketball for me, and the time and dedication it takes to be great, to be successful at something. And then 9/11 happened while I was in high school, and it triggered something in me. I wanted to do something about it. I never wanted that to happen again. I didn't want that to happen to my family or my friends, so I wanted to do something about it. So that's when I really started considering the military. And right off the bat, my mom took away the Marines and the Army, which left me the Navy. And I was really good at math, so the Navy wanted me. Later, I got a Navy ROTC scholarship to Norwich University. Coach Booth, who was still there, recruited me out of high school and went up there, had a great college basketball career. And then one thing led to another, went in the Navy after graduation.
At Norwich, great basketball player. You went to your college's Hall of Fame, I believe, 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Correct.
You won 2 conference championships. You set several records. You were a point guard.
Yes, sir.
I think you had a unique experience as student athlete because you were in, I forget what you guys called it.
The Corps of Cadets.
The Corps of Cadets. So not only were you a student athlete with all the time commitment that goes with that, you had your studies, all the time commitment that goes with that, and now the Corps of Cadets has a whole nother unique set of time commitment. How were you able to juggle all three of those and still be successful on the court, in the classroom, and in the Corps of Cadets?
It's extremely challenging. Just like West Point or Annapolis, any of the service academies, Norwich was founded based off of West Point. It was originally an Army school, and it's the same lifestyle. We lived in barracks. We had to wear a uniform. We had to iron our uniform every day and polish our boots every night. You woke up at 0500 to go out and do PT or physical training in the morning. I come back, shower, shave, go to class from 8 to 4, then go to practice, then study hall and dinner. It's extremely regimented to prepare you for life in the military. But just like anything in life, to be successful at it, you have to have great time management skills. You have to have great self-discipline. You have to have a strong commitment to yourself and who you are as a person. And I think the reason I had some success at Norwich is because I'm extremely competitive. And I think that's more the athlete in me. So I wanted to be the best student I can be, which is why I graduated with like a 3.9 GPA. I wanted to be the best athlete I can be. I was a competitor on the court. I'm only a 5'9 kid out of Cincinnati. I was not a big 6'8 kid with athletic ability jumping out of the gym. But I was so competitive and I worked so hard at it that I overcame a lot of those obstacles on the basketball court. And same thing with the military life, with the Corps of Cadets. And also, the Corps of Cadets is separate than the Navy ROTC at Norwich, so you had to do both, or you didn't have to. But I did the Corps of Cadets for my living situation, then I did the Navy ROTC on top of that. And it's an extremely regimented, disciplined lifestyle that I loved. I cherished it because everything was competitive. Everything about the military is competitive, from how many push-ups you can do to how fast you can run a mile, to being the best officer you can be in the Navy. You did fit reps and evaluations constantly throughout the military to help you become better and better, and I thrived in that type of environment. So for me, going to Norwich, it was a perfect fit for the type of person I was and the type of school it was. And when you have a great fit like that, just like any relationship or any organization or program, the sky's the limit for success, because it's a good fit all around. Everything matches. Everything checks all the boxes. So when you have all the resources to be successful, it's just about putting in the work and going out there and being the best you can.
So following Norwich, 4 years in the Navy, I think a few months of those, I believe you're on a submarine. Tell us about what you did in the Navy and then that submarine trip, because we've talked about it a few times over the years and it just seems unimaginable, especially now with all the bells and whistles we have electronically to be submerged for an extended period of time.
The Navy was unbelievable. It was a great experience. I would not trade my experience in the Navy for anything. The submarine trip was part of my training when I was a midshipman at Norwich. Before I got into the Navy, every summer in between your freshman and sophomore years, your sophomore and junior, your junior and senior years, the Navy would send you wherever they wanted to train you to become an officer in the Navy. So it was the summer after my sophomore year of college. They put me on an airplane and they flew me to La Maddalena, Italy, which is where I met my submarine, the USS Albany. And then I don't know what I can and cannot disclose about submarines. I boarded the submarine. We went through the Strait of Gibraltar, and then we spent the next 5 weeks underwater crossing the entire Atlantic Ocean. And that was 5 straight weeks of no sunlight, just stuck on a submarine, sleeping, then going to work, and then going back to bed. It was a long, long 5 weeks of my life, but it was such a fantastic experience. You learn so much about the Navy and who you are and just protecting the country and serving your country. It was definitely worth it. After graduation, when I got into the Navy, I was commissioned as an officer in the United States Navy. I went surface warfare, which means I went in the Navy on a ship on top of the water, not on a submarine, not in aviation or flying a jet, and not in the SEALs. So the Navy sent me across to the other side of the world. I went to Yokosuka, Japan as my first naval station, where I was on the USS Blue Ridge. It was a fantastic ship. We went to some of the great ports of the world. We went to Hong Kong, we went to Australia, we went to the Philippines. We traveled and saw a lot of things while working and serving our country and protecting our base in Japan. And we were forward deployed, so we were having that power presence out there. After 2 years in Japan, then I was sent to the USS Doyle down in Mayport, Florida. There I was an engineering officer as well. That was a frigate, so we were more hunting submarines down in Florida, where we were trying to find ships that were smuggling drugs in, or counter drug operations, or narcotics from Central and South America into the Florida or the southeastern parts of the United States. That was another challenge in my life, but those 4 years were unbelievable. I had no engineering experience prior to going into the Navy other than a few classes in college. So it was definitely a huge learning curve. I still remember when I got to the USS Blue Ridge in Japan, the captain of the ship sent me down to the engineering plant, and I knew nothing about engineering, but it was trial by fire, and you either sink or swim in the Navy. So you had to learn how to swim really fast and had to learn the whole 600-pound steam plant as fast as I can to get qualified to help the boat and keep it afloat, but it was a great experience.
Wow. So then your Navy career, I got to process all that. That was incredible. Your Navy career is coming to an end, and we've spoken before. I think you kind of had, I think, three ideas in your head of what you want to do as a professional. It was either career, Navy, fireman, or coach.
Yes.
And you chose coaching.
That's unbelievable. You remember those three.
We talked about it. I remember that.
We did.
So you decided no career Navy. Maybe I'll put the fireman thing on the back burner. Let's try this coaching thing. Tell us about that. You ended up going to Springfield after making that decision. Why that decision and then your experience at Springfield?
I was coming to the end of my 4-year commitment. If you go service warfare, you have to do at least 4 years. So I was coming to the end of my 4 years, and I love the Navy. I cherish my experience. I learned so much about myself. I got to travel and see the world as a young officer in the United States Navy. I was making decent money, but I remember there was just a piece of me missing. It was a job for me. I had no passion for it. It was just, I'd wake up, I'd go to the ship, I'd do my job, and I'd go home. And I wanted more out of life. I wanted to have that heart and passion into something that I wanted to do every day. And I was content with that decision. I served my country for 4 years. I protected my family and my friends to the best of my ability that I could. But there was just a part of me missing, and it was the basketball side. So I remember coming to the end of my four-year commitment and talking it over with my family. I remember calling my mom and telling her, "Mom, I think I'm getting out of the Navy." She was like, "Bud, you're crazy. You're making good money. You're traveling. You're doing all this fun stuff." I was like, "I know, but it's not for me for a career. I'm happy I did it. I wouldn't change it for anything." So I decided to get out of the Navy, and then I had two paths. I was either going to get back into the basketball world, or I was going to be a firefighter. Because for the 4 years I was in the Navy, I was a firefighter, and I loved it. It was awesome going to battling fires and being the rescue man on the ship. I loved that. So I felt like I could do that for a career. So I applied to both. I applied to be a firefighter down in Mayport, Florida, and I also applied to every basketball job I could find at the time. Charlie Brock, the head coach of Springfield College at the time, he was the first one that reached out to me and gave me a job getting out of the Navy. So that's the direction I went. I got into coaching, and 15 years later, I haven't looked back at it. It's been a ride, some good times, some tough times, but that's the world of athletics.
And from Springfield Center for a few years before getting your first head coaching position at Thomas College. Some people don't know, Jeff and I missed each other, I think, by a year. I was at Maine Maritime, which was still is in the North Atlantic Conference. Thomas also in NAC. I believe you had applied for our open basketball position at Maine Maritime, but Thomas had offered you first. Your experience as a first-time head coach, why Thomas? And it could be as simple as it was a head coaching position. I wanted it. And that experience at first time ever being a head coach.
Right. My path getting into coaching was a little different because of the Navy. So when I first got into coaching at Springfield, I was older than most first year assistant coaches. So I felt like I was ready to make that jump to be a head coach maybe a little bit earlier than some of my peers, simply because I was literally older than them, but also had great leadership experience from being an officer in the Navy for 4 years. So I had two great years at Springfield. And around that program, we went to the conference finals, did the same thing down at Center College. We won our conference championship 2 years in a row. I was there. And I was ready for that next jump in my career to become a head coach and to lead my own program and to build my own program. And I was applying at first to just jobs that any job that was open, just to get my name out there. But as opportunities became more abundant, I was being a little bit more selective, and I wanted to get back up to the Northeast. That's where my roots were, from my playing career at Norwich in Vermont for 4 years, coaching 2 years at Springfield College. So I had six out of my first 8 years of basketball were all in the Northeast. So I applied more specifically to jobs in the Northeast, which Maine Maritime and Thomas are both located in Maine. And Thomas was the first one that gave me that opportunity to build my own program, to be a head coach. So I jumped on it, and we had a great 4 years in Waterville, Maine at Thomas of leading that program and taking that to the finals of the North Atlantic Conference Tournament.
When you apply for a head coaching position, you get that phone call that job's being offered to you. What's that moment like on the other end of the phone?
It's a lot of feelings, just like we're going through now with our seniors graduating. Like, it's that bittersweet feeling of, you know, that you're excited about the next challenge and the next opportunity that's coming your way because another door is opening. But you're also a little sad that one door or one window is also closing. So when I got that phone call from Thomas, you know, I built these great relationships with the players at Center College. We just are coming off back-to-back championships in the Southern Athletic Association. Going to the NCAA tournament two times in a row was unbelievable and exciting, and you're competing on the national stage. But getting that opportunity to lead your own program and having that optimistic thought of you can do that as a head coach, you're excited for the future. So it's getting that phone call had a lot of feelings in it, a lot of mixed feelings in it. But at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you and your family. And for me in my coaching journey, that was the next best step for me.
All right. So now you have the head coaching job. It's probably everything you thought it would be and a lot of things you weren't expecting potentially. Did you have a, "Oh my gosh, I'm the head coach" moment where something happened and you're like, "Oh, that's my responsibility"? Is there anything that jumps out to you in that first rookie season for you at Thomas?
I guess there wasn't one moment, but the moments that caught me a little bit off guard is because as the assistant coach, you just more deal with like the good stuff, like pumping a player up or helping the head coach out with whatever he needs. You never have to do like the tough calls of punishing a player or holding a player accountable. So those were probably the toughest early on in my career. Now that I'm the head coach and a player's not playing with energy or not working as hard as he could, as a young head coach, you have to figure out how to hold that player accountable or to hold him up to our new team standards. And that was probably like the most eye-opening part, because I just assumed that players worked as hard as they could with positive attitudes and energy all the time, which is not realistic. So as that young, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed coach, it was that moment that you have to hold these players accountable to bring it every day. But you do it because you care about them and you want them to have as much success on the court as they can possibly have.
4 years at Thomas, you apply for the position at Penn College. At that time, what was the reason for the move from Thomas, and what intrigued you about Penn College?
I remember getting that phone call from you, actually. That was a good phone call. That I remember it. 4 years at Thomas, we built that program up. We took it all the way. We battled Husson in the conference finals. It was a great turnaround. But just like anything, you're trying to move up. And for me, moving up the coaching ladder, Penn College was a great next step for me. Living in Maine was great. I love Maine. Like, Maine in the summers and the falls, it's perfect. It's amazing. If you've never been there, I'd add it to your bucket list as well.
For a visit or two.
Right.
Not extended stay.
Not in the wintertime.
No.
Go in the summer or the fall. See the fall foliage. Enjoy the summers out on Booth Bay Harbor or Bar Harbor. But Maine is very isolated. And my family at the time was still living in Cincinnati, Ohio. We just had Jackson, and I wanted him to be around his grandparents and his cousins. So Pennsylvania was a lot closer to Cincinnati. Well, I guess it still is closer. Pennsylvania has not moved.
Yeah, it's moving. It moves.
It does.
I think it moves like an inch few years.
So that was a great next step for me in the coaching journey, to work my way up the coaching ladder while also getting our families a lot closer together, just so Jackson can be around his grandparents and his cousins a lot more than he was up in Maine. And at the time, the NEAC, we felt like, was a higher conference in Division III than the NAC. So it just checked all the boxes for us in making that next step in our journey.
And for those that haven't lived in Maine, Coach said the summers are gorgeous, the fall is spectacular, but then you have the winter, which is about 4.5 months, and then after winter's the wet season. There's really like no spring. And when you're in Maine, especially the higher up you go, you know, in Pennsylvania it gets dark in the winter around 5-ish. In Maine, it's, what do you think, 4:15, 4:20, because you're hanging out a little bit more on the East Coast than the rest of the Eastern Seaboard is. So it gets dark quick. It's cold longer. What's the snow? A good, you know, a nice little dusting's a good, what, 8 to 10 inches maybe. And you got to learn to deal with all of that. It's a different way of living.
Right. And that first snowfall is usually in like the end of November.
Yeah.
And because it's so cold, it just freezes. So it never goes away till April, May, when everything starts melting. And then you have the mud season and everyone's wearing their duck boots because everything's muddy. It's one way to live.
It's something. All right. So now you come to Penn College, and there was quite a bit of work to do. And number one, I think establishing a culture first, from my recollection of where we were at that point, and then I think probably basketball X and O's came second. Walk us through kind of coming in here and seeing what we had, and that means from facilities down to support down to what you're inheriting as far as a culture, and then how you decided to go about chipping away at building a program that you wanted.
So everything's a matter of perspective. So coming from Thomas College, seeing the facilities and the location and the academics that Penn College had at that time was a great step up. Penn College had a lot of positive things compared to Thomas, where I was coming from. So I was super excited to jump in and get my feet wet and just get the team rolling and winning a bunch of games. The counterpart to that is once you get into the conference and you see like the NEAC at the time or a lot of our United East schools, and then you start comparing the facilities then to the NEAC and United East facilities and financial aid and academics, then all of a sudden it got a lot more challenging. So coming in, I was probably a little naive at how quickly how hard it would be to turn around the program, just because I wasn't familiar with a lot of our competition at that time, which is fine. I'm fine to withstand a long battle and keep battling day in and day out. But those first couple years were tough. And trying to keep the unit, to keep the team together, was probably the toughest, because no one wants to lose. No one likes losing. But as the head coach, you have to have the big picture in mind. And a lot of that, to get to that end goal or to have that big picture in mind, you have to go through the monotony and the day-to-day grind of building a program. And you're doing it brick by brick. And, you know, it's tough to keep the ship moving forward when you just had 5 losses in a row. But you have to have the big picture in mind that you're going in the right direction. You're getting there. Sometimes the wins would not be necessarily winning the basketball games. It would be winning the locker room. Or now all of a sudden, it wouldn't be winning the game. It'd be, let's win the second half, or let's win the first half, or let's win the turnover battle, or let's win the rebounding battle. So we made the wins a little bit more manageable, because we believe that if we could do that, get those small wins over and over, they would add up to some bigger wins in the long run, which would keep the ship moving in the direction that we wanted to.
So as you start looking at players, identifying prospective student athletes, I'm sure you're looking for young men, one, obviously, that can play basketball, but I think two, probably that fits into what your coaching philosophy is. What is a Coach Hensley coaching philosophy, and what kind of are the major pillars of that philosophy?
So I try to be my authentic self with our program and with my guys. Because these guys are smart. Student athletes in today's world, they're smart. They get it. They know when someone's being fake or when someone's not being real. So the only way to build the program that I want is I got to be the guy that I really am. So the main pillars of our program are, we're going to work hard. We're going to be the hardest working team in the United East. We're going to put in more time and more work and more energy and more blood, more sweat, more tears than any other team. We're just, to be successful in anything in life, you got to put in the work. So that's pillar number one. Pillar number two is our energy. I'm an energy guy. I believe energy is contagious. I believe that you have to attack any challenge, any battle, any game with a positive energy in mind. A negative attitude, a negative energy, it's only going to bring you down. It's only going to make getting that win or getting that victory even harder. So first, we're going to work as hard as we can. Then we're going to do with as much positive energy as we can. And then our third pillar is we're going to be great teammates. We're all on the same page in this program. We're all here to support each other. We're all here to encourage each other and help each other and push each other and challenge each other. We're going to go compete on the court for practice for 2.5 hours. And then we're going to go support each other in the game and do everything we can to help the team win that game. I'd say those are the three big pillars, but we chose those for our program because that's me, and that it's easiest for me to teach those pillars to our team or to hold our athletes accountable to those pillars because that's what I live and breathe and do every day in the office. And that's who I am from when I was a player to when I was a naval officer to now when I'm a coach. So now it's easy for me to teach those and hold our players accountable to those standards. And once you get a team of guys that buy into those, it's not so much holding them accountable. It's let's run with those and be the best that we can be with those.
We spoke with Livingston earlier, and I asked him, is there anything I should ask Coach that maybe we don't see? And he said, yeah, ask him why he stopped stomping. Coach, why did you stop stomping?
I want to say it's a good reason. The players are actually listening to me now.
That's what he thought. He's
yeah.
Like, he didn't need to anymore. But for years, one of your trademark, your earlier years here
right.
to get people's attention was stomping on it because it would make this vibration. It's probably the reason why we had to replace the court, all the stomping you did your early years. So thank you for that. And you're getting a new court from that. We'll talk about that. So now, you know, early on, you have to stomp to get attention because you have to be yelling out things quite often over the last, especially last year and probably the year prior. You didn't have to do that as much. You didn't have to stomp as much. You didn't have to yell out instructions as much because I think you had this core group of seniors in particular that you had for a little bit, and they were basically you on the court.
Right, and it's unique that you say it like that because COVID happened right after my second year here. So we had a ton of buzz after those first two years because we made it to the NEAC tournament at the time. And then COVID happened, so it shut everything down. And then it was like we had to hit the restart button. So it was during COVID that we got this good senior class, and I'm so blessed that we got them because they were a different type of kid because they didn't have that great senior year in high school. So they really wanted to have it in college. And I give this senior class all the credit. Like, they stuck together through all the ups and downs of building a program, because their first couple years, like, as good as Gavin is and as good as Big Mike is, like, their first year here, I think we only won like 5 games. And that's tough. Like, they could have easily, especially in today's world, they could have easily transferred or left or gone somewhere else. But they were so committed to the program. They were so committed to the school that they stuck with it. And then the next couple of years, we were able to build the program and keep getting better. And it didn't make my job easier. I just had to translate how I coach them, because no, I didn't need to yell out the same instructions year after year. I didn't need to stomp on the same part of the court year after year, because now we were on the same page. So, like, using Gavin as an example, he's been our starting point guard for 4 years. He knew what I was going to yell before I even yelled it. So as a great point guard or as the coach on the floor, he was able to communicate that to the guys, whether it was getting back on defense or running a play on offense or talking during a timeout. It just made all of our jobs a little bit easier, because we were all on the same page, since we just spent the last 3-4 years all together going through all these big time games.
Makes sense. I'm going to ask you 2 favorite moment questions. 1, favorite moment on the court. That could be a win. That could be a student hitting whatever, 1,000 points. And then a favorite off the court moment. You spend a lot of time with the guys in the locker room, on the bus, in hotels. Imagine there's a favorite moment or two just hanging with the guys. What's your favorite moment on the court?
I don't want to sound cliche, but I'm going to use the moment on the court when we went down and beat St. Mary's this year in the conference tournament in the first round. It was, you know, we did not finish the regular season on a high note. We struggled to finish the regular season. I remember joking with Cade. I grew very close with Cade Cavanaugh this year, because he had a season-ending injury, but he came to every game and every practice, and he was always right next to me. So I grew close to him just through regular conversation. And we were joking. We were finishing the regular season like the Pittsburgh Steelers were, where we were just losing all these games, but we were going to finish and make the playoffs and lose in the first round, which when people had that idea or that thought in their head that we were just going to make the tournament and lose in the first round, and then we don't, it's made it a little bit more special, because we did, it felt like we did something not a lot of people thought we could do. So we finished the regular season on a struggle. We lost a couple games in a row. Then we lost a tiebreaker with 2 other teams that we didn't even play this year because of how our conference was aligned this year. So we dropped from like the 8 or 9 seed all the way to the 12 seed. Then we found out our draw now is we have to go 6 hours down to St. Mary's and battle a really good team that had they have a Division I transfer. They had the Rookie of the Year in the conference this year. They were a very good basketball team. So it's like, man, we just struggled finishing the year. We drew this tough draw in the first round where we have to go down to St. Mary's. It's going to be a long bus ride back if we lose. But we went down there and the guys just played so good. I think we got up by like 15 or 20 points at one point. Like, we were locking up on defense. The guys were hitting shots. They were playing great team basketball that we talked about playing all year. And it was just so special to see them all come together and put it together for a full 40 minutes. It's one of those games like you'll never forget. And you just, I'll always reference that game of when this group came together and pulled off a major upset. It literally was a 12 beating a 5 seed, just like you watch in Division I March Madness every year. And everyone celebrates and everyone's jumping around and hollering. And it was very special and meaningful to be a part of that with this team.
How about off the court? Favorite moment?
Yeah, I'm beginning to experience it now, since the guys are done with classes and they're starting to leave to go home once they're done with finals. There's not one favorite moment, but it's all the moments I have with the guys in the office. Like, I already miss Gavin coming up to the office and just talking with me about recruiting or talking to me about the NBA playoffs. Or I miss Christian coming up and talking to me about things in Virginia, where he's from. I just miss those small little moments that, you know, at first glance, they don't come across as they mean anything. But now all of a sudden, when you take all those moments away, because these guys are graduating, they're going on to major jobs or playing overseas, like, now all of a sudden, all those moments have that much more meaning to it, because you don't have those anymore. And I miss Gavin coming up to the office and just talking, or Cade coming up and just talking, or Big Mike just stopping in to say hi. Those are moments that I enjoy, but I'll never get again. So it's one of those things I'm always going to remember, and I'm always going to miss since I don't have the opportunity to coach him anymore.
If I'm a prospective student athlete, I want to play college basketball, and I'm considering Penn College as one of those options. How should I conduct myself on the court? What things should I be doing during season, off season, and how do I get my name to you for you to come see me and identify me as a potential Wildcat?
I would say there's more than just basketball. There's really three areas we evaluate through the recruiting process. Basketball is obviously one of them. We recruit the best basketball players that we can. Two, just as important, is the character standpoint. Just like we talked about our core values, if you're not a hard worker, if you don't have positive energy, if you're not a great teammate, it's probably just not a good fit overall. It doesn't mean you can't play college basketball. It just means this program and what we believe in might not be the best place for you. And sometimes I feel like a matchmaker when I'm going through the recruiting process. Just like I'm looking for the best basketball players, I'm also looking for the right ones because I want that player to also have Penn College as the best fit for them. When boxes are checked on both sides, then it's like a match made in heaven. So we have our standards, we have our program values and beliefs. So when I go through the recruiting process, we're looking for those types of young men that fit from a character standpoint with work ethic and positive attitude and being a great teammate, but also academics as well. Penn College is a different type of school. So if a recruit wants one of our unique majors, construction, HVAC, electrical, anything in the health sciences or computer sciences, that's another checkbox where it's a good match on both sides. The best way to get in contact with me is just send me an email with some video. We need to see you play. I want to see the most recent video. I'll take highlights. I'll take game film. I'll take AAU. I'll take even workouts in your backyard with your dad, and he's rebounding for you. Anything where we just have the opportunity to see you play and see what you can do on the basketball court. That gives me an idea of the type of player you are. And then we're going to get to know you through the recruiting process as we begin texting you and calling you and coming to your games or talking with your high school coach, talking with your AAU coach. They're going to give us great feedback on you as the type of player you are, the type of person you are. And then we go through the recruiting process of getting to know you and getting you on campus for a visit, doing the application, and hopefully one day choosing Penn College.
Great. Fans, family, and friends of Penn College men's basketball can follow your team's journey on Twitter and Instagram at what's your handle? PCTM Basketball on X and Instagram. Coach Hensley is very active on both. It's a good follow. That's all we have for you, Jeff. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Wildcast.